last week I was asked to give a short statement for the Bellingham Unitarian Fellowship's annual interfaith Thanksgiving service, which I'd never been to. It's really pretty great. They pull in a lot of different traditions from around town, people, a lot of different representatives of different faith groups. But it's that rare time of the year, again, when we take the time to think about this subject that we annually feel like we need to remind ourselves about, thankfulness. And so I was wondering, is there something we could say that would help us integrate this idea of thankfulness right into our lives to help us not feel like we're always losing track of it? So I've taken the comments I made that evening and I expanded on them a bit. It seems our Zen way is to practice an attentive mindfulness to the present moment in all of our everyday life, and in our sitting practice, through following the movements of our breath. And the breath, of course, seems notable in the sense that among the body processes, can be both fully willed and fully involuntary. And thinking, perhaps, is maybe the only other body process we have that is similar that way, can be completely, fully involuntary or voluntary, depending. Thinking and breathing are often the subject matter of much Zen discussion and about the inner life of our meditation practice. So, as we know, meditation is therefore, because of this divide between the involuntary and the voluntary that we're practicing with, is more difficult than it first appears. So we work hard to watch our breath without prejudice, just noticing how it is, how it comes to us, how it leaves. And in the process, we also notice how thoughts and feelings, beliefs, theories all follow this pattern. They appear and then they disappear. And these elements themselves, they seem in the end to lack true substance. But the flow of the exchange with our lives remains. So it seems like it's the exchange itself that seems most notable and important. I was thinking how this, you can apply the same idea to a description of how the natural world works. Because there doesn't seem to be any real profit in the natural world from the idea of possessiveness. All the value is really in the continued vibrant exchange of elements, continuing as it has, as it will. And no merit seems to come from that which gives, that's more than the gift itself or than the benefit to that which receives. It's the act of the exchange itself that has merit, the flow of elements continuing. And an expression I often remind myself about, I think I heard it attributed to a Tibetan teacher once, but I'm not sure, that seems to make this personal, is that nothing good comes to us except through the kindness of others. In a way, we acknowledge all of this at the very opening of our formal Zen meal chant, when we declare our intent that we're making when we say, may we, with all beings, realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. To be aware of the breath, then, is to turn towards it. So in some measure, is to lean our attitude in the direction of an awareness of our breath. But this idea of leaning seems like we're talking about some intention or coloration to the effort, some prejudice beyond just absolute blank attention. But in actual practice, I think we find rather quickly that many attitudes flit in and out of our consciousness while we're on the cushion. Many potential distractions can emerge. And practicing with the notion that we must enter the task with what we imagine to be some kind of pure blank intention, I believe, is sort of a heavy lift. And since it seems daunting, it may even result in a kind of tendency towards involving a back eddy of judgment about our effort. And that can leave us vulnerable then to our blind spots, the vagaries, the unnoticed habitual patterns which we carry and continually work to sort of undermine our present awareness. In fact, you know, the instructions to follow the breath itself is a technique. It's a skillful means to aid in our maintenance of attention and against those blindnesses. So I feel that if we ignore the factor of an attitudinal leaning in our practice, we're subject more easily to whatever attitudinal component seems to come along for the ride, whatever attitudinal component we may habitually utilize. You know, we may have a habit to approach sitting as a task, something to accomplish well and correctly, something to maintain on a schedule. We may have the habit to approach sitting as an escape, a place to let down our guard and allow sort of a lassitude to flow over us, to relieve the way we may feel that life so frequently acts to beset us with stresses. We may have a habit to approach sitting as a perennial outsider to the work, never considering as substantial or real the many years of practice we've actually faithfully executed, and just forever maintaining an insecurity in our stance. In recognizing these attitudinal leanings we bring to the cushion, we could choose to acknowledge them and adopt a mild shift and apply a purposely applied attitude or stance. And I'd say we might entertain the stance informed by these ideas about giving and receiving, the recognition of the in and the out breath, the cascade of the passing thoughts and moods. So first, right, of course, we purposely acknowledge the presence of our seat and then of the whole world that sits with us, and we practice the decorum, the movement, and care, placing our bodies, and it just informs the entire manner in which we enter the process. Then, once we've established ourselves in our place, we might remember what Thich Nhat Hanh has recommended, a half smile. But I'd go a little farther. I'd just suggest the idea that this leaning is even just more subtle. Just call it an inner smile. Not really like a facial smile, but instead a kindness, an accepting curiosity, a delight in our approach. So for our meditation practice, this would mean mindfully aware with a loving, thankful, non-judgmental attention, and we could call that right effort. And the effort is to hold forth our mindfulness through welcoming this present moment and just being fully available to it. We have to be watchful for the moment, to be aware of the moment, and we have to be watchful for whatever may be means that we have to be accepting of everything, which in turn leans towards kindness. And also, our ethical practice that's taught to us is beginning in generosity, in Dana Paramita, the perfection of generosity. So the perfection of generosity is to claim no possessiveness, to be aware of things always and forever passing away. We must be accepting of loss and of leaving, and this is how giving is empty. Because when something is truly given, there never was any holding or possessing of it at all. So seeing in this way, everything received is also given, and giving and receiving is the true quality of the breath. So we could welcome this breath right now as a gift, coming unexpectedly, like a surprise. Who knows? And maybe the next breath won't come. And someday that will happen. But what about this one? You know, I find that the breath has a genesis deep in the belly, just below the navel. It's almost like a tiny muscle that flinches and opens the entire diastolic spasm that invites air into the body and accepts that gift. So waiting without expectation, but instead with this contentment that knows that whatever comes will be the right thing at the right time for this moment. Just be happy about uncertainty and all the gifts of kindness that uncertainty contains. Then we allow it to leave, all on its own, in its own time, no grasping, bound off to wherever it will, on whatever journey away from us it's going to take. We don't hold it while we have it. We don't even claim it for an instant. We just see the entire passage of breath as a journey of the breath through us. Having a contentment that when something leaves, it's never left us really, that nothing really leaves and nothing really comes. Exactly, because everything, absolutely everything, leaves and comes continually without exception, including whatever we call me and you or this and that or us and them. So that was my big idea. Be content and lean inwardly toward the joy of this moment. Although we say follow the breath, it's not the giver, receiver, or gift that our awareness is best focused on, but actually in the end, it is the exchange that's the critical thing, and the exchange is best noticed and paid to with an accepting attitude of kindness, which is the quality of this ever-present diastolic flow of generosity and thankfulness, giving and receiving. So I thought we might have a few moments that people might have a question or two. If we have time.
We do.
Yes. Or things that people want to add or say.
Well, I'd like to say something. I got really excited when I heard, when I listened to you talk about exchange. And in the science of respiration, it's all about gas exchange, and that's what keeps you healthy and what keeps oxygen moving through your body. And I just never thought of that until you put it out that way. I mean, it's just this sort of beautiful layer that, yes, you know, it's exchange with all of us, and it's also within us.
Yeah, I've often, on that biological level, I've often heard things like, you know, just that there are a lot of beings living inside of us. And then this whole thing about oxygen, you know, that you might be breathing in a molecule that was breathed in by a dinosaur or something like that, you know. Or the idea that all the molecules in your body change on the average of like 7 years. You're just a completely different entity. And that's because everything's being exchanged all the time.
You said so much. I want to get a copy of your talk. really, you just said so many things. And one of the things that resonated with me, I think you said, was how we come to Zazen as, in some persona, didn't use that word, but some idea of ourself, and that's how we, and I think that is so true. And it's an old idea. It may be even an ancient idea that we've had since childhood, that we can only expect a certain thing from doing this.
Yeah.
That's a really wonderful insight, because we trap ourselves in those expectations. So thank you. Please, can you send that talk?
Sure. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's like those things that are like, they're like so close you don't see them, and you're just always churning over the same little,
like, oh, I know this is going to happen all the time, it always does, it's always me,
just a way of being. So although there, you know, you might say, well, it feels contrived to smile, but it's like, well, it's probably contrived doing what we usually do, but we don't notice when we're doing it.
Better than contriving a hateful expression.
Right.
I hadn't really thought about, I mean, I do a lot of work on being grateful for things. I don't very often think about being grateful for the air that we breathe. Maybe like in August when it gets smoky, most of the year we have good air, and I'm glad for that. But even, I mean, one could think about that every breath of meditation, because if there wasn't enough oxygen, we would certainly notice that to our detriment. So just to be grateful for a breath of air, it's a good thing to be reminded of.
Yeah. And it feels good.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. I really appreciated just the topic of being thankful and your expression of just one breath. Because I often think about it in that way of thinking, like so many hundreds of conditions have to come together just for one molecule of oxygen, for one breath, to be then converted into something else. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a really grateful thing to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Okay. You're cut off. Yes.
I just want to thank you for your poetic expression. It's very poetic. It was like you were reciting poetry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. So thankfulness, the giving and the receiving. And so when we let that breath go, we're also being very generous, you know. That's how we express that too. So, well, thanks.
May our intentions equally